From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Meet the hormone monsters. They are the hairy, scary beasts of the Netflix animated series Big Mouth. They torment the minds and bodies of middle schoolers in the throes of puberty, when everything is monstrously confusing, a little out of control, and a very big deal. Well, Big Mouth is funny and raunchy and one of several streaming shows being praised for their bold and compassionate portrayals of teenage sexuality. Sex Education, another Netflix hit, and Hulu's Pen 15 are changing the way teenage sexuality is depicted on the small screen. I mean, look, right now, only 24 states mandate sex education in schools, and 13 of them require the instruction to be medically accurate. So teens go where teens go for comfort and camaraderie. They go to each other and the culture, and that culture is online. This hour on Point, puberty on the small screen. And you can join us. Have you watched Big Mouth or Pen 15 or Sex Education? Could you relate to what you saw? Or is it just too comedic, too fictional and cringeworthy? Do you wish you had shows like this when you were in the throes of puberty? Or are you using the shows as an opportunity to talk with your kids about it now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook and On Point Radio. Now, of course, because this hour is going to be addressing issues of teenage sexuality and puberty, the subject matter may not be appropriate for everyone. So that is our gentle warning to listeners. You make the decision. But first, I want to actually just listen to a clip from Netflix's Big Mouth. In season two of the series, the characters encounter the Shame Wizard. It's a ghoulish-looking figure who inflames the character's deepest senses of humiliation. Remember, this is an animated series. So here's a scene between the Shame Wizard and Andrew, who's voiced by John Mulaney.
Where am I?
All rise! Shame Court is now in session.
What?
The Honorable Shame Wizard presiding.
Shame Court?
Silence! Thus begins the trial of Andrew Globerman, who stands accused of being a loathsome little pervert. I have seen many good people do terrible things, but the state shall prove that Andrew Globerman didn't do a bad thing.
Yeah.
He is a bad thing!
Oh, that's the Shame Wizard passing judgment on Netflix series Big Mouth. And joining us now from Los Angeles is Jennifer Flackett, co-creator and executive producer of Big Mouth. She's written for television and film for 25 years, working as both film director and producer with credits including the original Beverly Hills 90210 and the romantic comedy Wimbledon. Big Mouth is preparing for the launch of its third season on Netflix. Jennifer Flackett, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thrilled to be here.
It's terrific to have you. Okay, so first of all, take us back to the beginning. How did this idea to create an animated series featuring the torments of middle school puberty, how did it come to be?
Well, it was very much inspired by Nick Kroll and Andrew Goldberg. They are our co-creators, and they grew up together, and we were kind of all thinking of this show to do, you know, about them and about them at this age in life. And puberty just was, it just became the subject that we were talking about. That's such a potent time of life. It's a time that my husband and I, who is also the other co-creator, Mark Levin, mm-hmm. we all found that time of life to be this potent time where you're trying to figure things out. And we at the time had a 13-year-old son who's now 16. But we were also just watching him kind of go through the throes of puberty. And, you know, we were sort of saying, is there a way, because we knew the show was going to be animated, to, you know, talk about that. And Andrew said, like a hormone monster. And Nick said, touch yourself, Andrew. And that was really how it was all born.
Wow. Okay.
I just wanted to kind of give a voice to that voice inside of you.
You must have felt that there was more that you can do, could do, because it's animated and not a live action series.
Totally. The show became what it is for us, totally, because it's animated. And it's so funny watching Sex Education and Pen 15, because we're like, oh, look how you do it live action. But, you know, for us, it was always because we said, oh, we can do anything, and we can have the shame wizard, and, you know, you can have a hormone monstrous as well, and you can have, you know, the ghost of Duke Ellington talking to you. You can just kind of have these flights of fancy to describe these things that feel indescribable when you're 13.
Okay, so you mentioned the hormone monstress. Let's play a scene from Big Mouth. This is from the first season, the second episode, I believe, of the first season, where Jesse, voiced by Jesse Klein, meets the hormone monstress, this character who is going to be part of her life for many years to come.
What are you?
I am the hormone monstress. Listen to me. You want to shoplift lipstick. You want to listen to Lana Del Rey on repeat while you cut up all your T-shirts. You want to scream at your mother and then laugh at her tears.
But I don't want to scream at my mom.
She's not your mom anymore. From now on, you call her Shannon.
It's the hormone monstrous from the first season of Big Mouth. Jennifer, let me ask you. So in that very first season, what I found remarkable in episodes 1 and 2 is the first episode really sort of centered around male puberty. And then right there in episode 2, the whole story is about Jesse, this teenager, experiencing her first period. So it was an honest exploration, funny, but honest exploration of female puberty. How important was it to you to get that right up there at the near the beginning of the show?
We always knew the second show was going to be Jesse getting her period. And we always knew that it was, we try to be as even-handed as we can about kind of boy shows and girl shows and really showing from both points of view. And, you know, and I always say, you know, I obviously fight for those stories, but all my male collaborators fight for those too. They really feel like that's what makes the show so special. And, you know, it's funny, as I was listening, we didn't know that there was going to be a hormone monstrous right when we started. And of course, as we were like, well, we got to get her in here right away. You know, we can't do this without her, you know. And she's voiced by Maya Rudolph, so she's spectacular. And everything I would have wanted when I was 13 to talk to me, you know, I feel listening to it that I probably said some of those things to my mother all those years ago. You know, I definitely laughed at her tears a couple times. And so we just always knew it was boys and it was girls together. And, you know, I just knew I really wanted that. There's a shot of kind of a girl's underwear with the period blood on it. And I was like, that's the shot that I really want to see, because I would have wanted to see that and know, oh, this is what they're talking about. This is what's coming.
Right. So, I mean, the show is uninhibited in depictions of all the changes that come with puberty. But they're middle schoolers also. And I think there are some people who have watched Big Mouth who say it's funny, it's honest, it's raw. But some of the things that these middle schoolers are depicted as doing may not necessarily be also age appropriate for what middle schoolers might do. What's your response to that?
Well, I think, I mean, it was certainly when we conceived of it, it was conceived with a slightly older audience in mind, in the sense that I think that we really felt like, you know, this is for college kids. Mm-hmm. But I have discovered for myself, as I kind of, you know, talk about it with people, that I think I've come to believe that if you are going through puberty, this is a show for you. I also say to all my friends who say, can my kids watch it? I'm like, you watch it first. And you decide. And I always say, watch the first two, because the first show's for boys and the second show's for girls. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like it's a kind of honest depiction of what's going on. You know, I when I talk with kids, I feel they feel that this feels age appropriate to them, just maybe not to grown-ups, thinking if it's age appropriate for them.
Do you think it would have been possible to make this show anywhere other than on a streaming service?
No, I don't. I think the show became what it is because we were on Netflix and because of the freedom that we had there.
And what? And because there's sort of no content restrictions.
Yeah, I mean, because there's no content restrictions, and because they have just been the most incredible partners of, you know, letting us figure out what the show is and celebrating that.
Yeah. You know, though, at the end of the first season, right, there's this kind of this moment where there's like a wink, wink and nudge, nudge to viewers where one of the characters says, you know, maybe one day you'll look back at this time fondly and make something beautiful out of it. And then the other character says, what, like a show about a bunch of kids masturbating? I mean, so you're kind of aware. There's an awareness there that Big Mouth is walking a fine line too.
Yes, I mean, we always know that we are walking a fine line, and also really trying to be about something. You know, we always say, like, if we don't know what an episode is really about, then we don't really have our show yet. And so, you know, each episode we're really like, what's the emotional story we're telling here?
Mm. Well, Jennifer, can you give us a clue about what the third season might hold for us?
Well, you know, I always say it's a show where I think it's a little bit more about how teenagers live now. You know, there's a little bit more about phones. You know, there's, you know, we're kind of telling stories about kind of testing, and there's even sort of a sexual harassment episode. So it's really kind of finding those moments that feel really present in puberty and kids' lives and shining a light on them.
Well, Jennifer Flackett, co-creator and executive producer of Big Mouth, which is preparing for the launch of its third season on Netflix, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Folks, we're talking about puberty and depictions of teenage sexuality on the small screen, specifically through streaming services like Netflix and Hulu, and what we're seeing now that maybe we didn't see before, and why, how these discussions about teenage sexuality are happening through these series. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about depictions of puberty and teenage sexuality on the small screen, specifically on streaming services like Netflix, that's had a couple of hits on its hand, including Big Mouth and the other series, Sex Education. On Hulu, there's Pen 15 as well. And we want to hear from you about what you think these fresh, new, modern, complex, and even compassionate depictions, granted they're through fictional series, but on streaming services of teenage sexuality, what kind of conversations are they sparking in your home? And do you wish that when you were going through the throes of puberty that you had these kinds of shows to commiserate with? A lot of calls coming in already, so let's go to one. Karen is calling from Camden, Maine. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a mom of two teenagers, 17 and 13, and I just want to say that we all love Big Mouth and watch it sometimes together, sometimes not together, but it is, I think, one of the most important series to ever exist on television. It has just really helped my husband and I communicate with our kids about sensitive issues in a way that's hilarious. And, you know, I think that it touches on some really, really serious issues in a very compassionate way. I think that the episode on abortion is probably, you know, one of the most important episodes that has ever appeared on television. So, Thank you so much.
Well, Karen, don't go away. Let me just ask you a quick question. I'm hearing how enthusiastic you are for this show and how it's helping you through the wilds of parenting a teenager or two teens. But are there ever moments, I mean, the show is very raunchy. Granted, it's an animated series and there's a lot of language in it, too. That have ever, like, do you ever think it's like almost too much?
It's a lot, but it's, you know, it's so funny. But also, teenagers are raunchy. You know, and that time of life is disgusting in so many ways. And, you know, it's very honest. You know, and I think that it takes away. I thought it was interesting that you used that clip from The Shame Monster because it, you know, it really, the series really does take away that shame of being a teenager that so many kids feel. And there's so much. You know, kids are really feeling very anxious these days about so many things. And it's helpful to have a series like this that takes that shame away, sees teenagers for what they are, which is, you know, kind of gross and nasty little creatures, and says, this is what it is right now, and it's okay, and there are others. You know, everyone is like that, and it's going to be okay.
Right. Well, Karen, thank you so much for your call. I want to bring in two more guests here who can help us reflect on what Karen has just said. Joining us now from San Francisco is Shafia Zaloom. She is a health educator at the Urban School in San Francisco. She also has a national consulting business that deals with health and sexual education and is author of the forthcoming book, Sex, Teens, and Everything in Between. Shafia Zaloom, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
Also with us from New York is Sonia Soraya, a TV critic at Vanity Fair. Sonia's recent piece is headlined, Netflix and Pen 15 are changing the way TV does teen sex. We have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Sonia, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks.
So, Shafia, let me start with you. Our caller, Karen, just said that she found Big Mouth to be an incredible parenting tool to help spark conversations with her two teens, who I think are 13 and 17 right now. What do you think about that, that these series could be really helpful to parents?
Oh, I completely agree. And I use media in my classroom. I encourage, when I do parent education on how to actually talk to kids about healthy sexuality, to use media as a vehicle by which to discuss family values and, you know, what's important, safe sexuality practices, issues that kids might be wrestling with. And it's great for kids, too, because it allows for just enough distance in which the conversation can happen and not feel too awkward and difficult, where you're talking about, you know, something else and yourself indirectly versus so directly, which teens sometimes have a really hard time with their folks.
Yeah. So, Sonia, let me turn to you because, I mean, we should just talk about how different these shows are than what we had, you know, a generation ago. How different are they?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. The way that I described it in the piece is that it feels like this is the explicit content of a Cinemax series, but in a show that is, you know, that could otherwise with the cast and with the teenage topics like romance and dating and parents getting divorced could absolutely be on Freeform or the Disney Channel or CW. There's something really astonishing about linking so much frank discussion with what is, you know, such a staple for storytelling otherwise, which is high school or middle school in the case of Pen 15 and Big Mouth. Sex education on Netflix takes place in the British equivalent of high school. And in that, the main character who's 16, his mother is a sex therapist. So he's learned sort of how to be a sex therapist, like, you know, whatever, like he's picked up some stuff. And the demand in his school for kids who are like, I mean, teenagers who are like, please help me. I don't know what I'm doing. And I have this like very complicated romantic or like personal situation I'm trying to understand. It's to me, the demand is really, is so clear. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk more about that, but we should dwell for a moment on how explicit these shows can be, right? I mean, regarding sex education, the other Netflix series that you just mentioned, Here we have characters that are supposed to be, what, 16, 17 because they're in high school. The actors are older than that. They're in their 20s. But there's some really explicit scenes of teenage bodies in that series. Do you think they cross a line?
Do I think they cross the line?
Yeah.
I will say that personally, there were times where I was like, I'm going to cover my eyes. I don't know that I need to watch this scene. In general, it's a much harder question because I think that, you know, if the actors and the storytellers there are all on board with what they're doing, then it doesn't feel like my place to judge that. But I certainly feel that it certainly pushed my boundaries just as a viewer. One scene in particular is with two teenage girls who are like figuring out how to have sex with each other for the first time. And I was just like, I don't know if I need to watch both of them be this intimate with each other, like right now. But I hope it's really educational for someone, you know?
Mm. Yeah, Shafia,
I don't know. It's a tricky question.
Yeah. And that's actually, so Shafia Zaloom, what do you think about that? Because, you know, we're definitely talking about how these shows can spark conversations and, you know, be a touchstone or a guide for teens and their families. But at the same time, I share Sonia's view on this. Sometimes I did feel like, I'm not sure I necessarily needed to see that, because how explicit do we need depictions of teenagers to be?
I think that's a really good question to ask. And, you know, with the internet and how much access kids have to explicit material, it does normalize that in a lot of ways. And I think that the type of sex and sexuality that's actually represented in those sex scenes is actually quite narrow. And there is the pornification of our culture in so many ways in regards to, you know, how sex is actually depicted. And for kids who may not have an experiential context or haven't had those conversations, you know, for them, it's then like, well, so is this what it's really like? And is this how I should be? And is this what I should be doing? It's also important to note that many times when teenagers, you know, actors are depicting teenagers, those actors and their bodies are actually those of adults.
Right.
And that's very different. And so when kids are looking for validation or something is resonating with them or they're drawn to what they're seeing because it's sexually relevant and their brains, you know, are then drawn to that, we do have to, I think, ask that question and say, is this appropriate? Is it okay? How narrow is it? And do I want my kid to understand what the infinite possibilities are beyond just this? Mm. Because a lot of times it tends to also not focus on intimacy, you know, the real experience, embodied experience of intimacy and connection, but rather sort of this impersonal, over-sexualized and objectified kind of intercourse that's happening.
Can I just jump in here for a second?
Because yeah, of course.
I mean, even though Big Mouth is an animated series, like it's a cartoon, right? But that's the one where the world is middle school. And you heard me ask Jennifer earlier, like those middle school characters are doing stuff which I didn't quite think was that middle schoolers do. I mean, maybe am I just a prude and completely out of touch, or was there some stuff that wasn't age appropriate in the series?
I mean, in my experience, and I appreciate Big Mouth a ton. I love the series. I've, you know, watched the whole thing. I've watched it with my kids. And I actually talk to the writers sometimes, and they've been public about that too. And they are genuinely interested in honest depictions of what kids are wrestling with and to be responsible, like how to balance responsibility in what they depict and show. I do get concerned sometimes that in any of these shows, the behavior that's depicted is so extreme for entertainment purposes that it becomes gratuitous and the message gets lost. And that in my experience, too, with middle school and high school, especially in middle school, I don't think that's what all middle school kids are going through. I think when we start to generalize, you know, these developmental stages amongst kids, there are lots of kids for whom sex, partying, you know, experimenting with drugs are actually not on their radar.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to, you know, think about and talk about, as we should, those kids for whom it is.
Right. And I mean, also, there's a feeling through a common feeling through the series that the few depictions of kids who aren't sexually active, like that maybe there's something wrong with that or they're struggling with that decision.
Yes.
Well, let me
exactly.
defend the show for a second.
So, yeah, Sonia, go ahead. Like, yeah.
Well, because I feel that, like, something crucial is that Andrew, like, throughout the first season, Andrew, the taller character voiced by John Mulaney, is going through puberty and is beset by these feelings, but his best friend isn't. Like, that's the whole plot
right.
of the first, you know, that's the overarching plot of the first season. And I think, to a degree, so much of the tension of that season and following is that all of the kids are at different places. And that's one of the reasons why there's, like, a few characters who are, whose hormones are really active and are really thinking about this stuff all the time, but they are having crushes on or best friends with characters who aren't ready. So, like, for example, there's a character, Missy, who's played by Jenny Slate. And there's a point in the show where she and her parents are both like, oh, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to have a relationship. Like, I'm not ready to date, even though other people in my class are ready to date. But it's too much for me. And I think that I think that there's a way to I think that, like, in all of these shows, there are characters who are at different places. And I also think that teenagers who are watching these things are probably aware of the fact that changes are happening to them and they don't know, like, what they can expect, which is one of the reasons.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're a little outsized.
You know, we've got a ton of callers and I don't want to neglect them too much. So let me just get a quick call in here. Let's go to Jenny, who's calling from Kent, Ohio. Jenny, you're on the air. Jenny, you're there? Okay, looks like Jenny is not there. Shafia, Jenny had previously told our call screener that she'd grown up in the 80s and everything on TV then, regards to being a teenager, was glossy. And that's why, if Jenny had been on the line, she was hoping to tell us that she was glad that kids have a chance to explore issues closer to reality now through these shows. What do you think, Shafia?
Oh, I completely agree. I think these shows are great. I think they're fantastic. I think they're huge opportunities for us to, you know, talk about, shed light on what's real. Because I think all of us, teenagers included, you know, really want to hear and feel something that's honest, that's real, and that kids are absolutely wrestling with all of these different things. And the hormone monsters are brilliant. But, you know, in my classroom, we actually use some of this media and we talk about it. It's been an incredibly valuable teaching tool for me. The thing is that, you know, the majority of kids, like you open the show with, don't get sex education. Mm-hmm. And so then we can't leave this to be the default sex education for kids, and that it's really important that we be talking to them about it. And sometimes I wonder, and I know that not all parents are talking to their kids about these shows that they're watching.
Right.
And I think that that's a really important piece, because there are huge developmental leaps across puberty. There's three stages of it. It's really from about the time someone's 10 until, for female-bodied people, they're in their early 20s, and for male-bodied people, their late 20s, even early 30s. So that's a huge developmental leap to be talking about puberty in a way, you know, that we're all, you know, all those characters are dealing with. But I think it's important that individual sense of readiness, like, how does a kid actually know, how do they navigate that? Mm-hmm. And how do they know in real life, when it comes to complexities and dynamics of human relationships, that they're just trying to figure out?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I just want to play a quick moment from the Netflix series Sex Education. Sonia, you had mentioned it earlier, and it's also a series that really grapples with these things in an upfront way. This one's a live action show. So in this scene, you're going to hear Otis, played by Asa Butterfield, who serves as a sex therapist for his high school classmates. His mother is an adult sex therapist. And in this scene, a character named Amy seeks out Otis's help when her boyfriend asked her what she would enjoy during sex.
I don't know what I want. No one's ever asked me that before. Steve says his thing is girls properly enjoying sex. He says he can tell I'm being fake.
Well, are you?
Yeah, I'm always fake.
Well, you should probably think about, you know, things you enjoy when it's just you. Alone.
Ugh. I don't do that. Yuck.
A scene from Netflix's Sex Education. Sonia, you wrote, here's a quote from your story. You wrote, "It's uncomfortable to consider what some in the viewing audience would be up to without the compassionate, steady guidance of sex education's well-intentioned writers." We got a minute to go before the break, but what did you mean by that?
Well, because as you were saying before, and as Shazi was saying too, there's not enough sex education in general in the world. And even what we have, I mean, even when it's mandated, I feel like it doesn't support enthusiastic consent and seeking pleasure in a way that's responsible. And I think what Otis says to Amy here is it's okay to want what you want and to have a body that has these desires. You don't exist just to please other people. I mean, that's a message that teenage girls do not receive. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah. I mean, it was so moving to hear that in the show.
Well, Sonia Soraya, TV critic for Vanity Fair, and Shafia Zaloom, a health educator at the Urban School in San Francisco. Hang on for just a moment. We have to take our quick break. We are talking about teenage sexuality and puberty on the small screen, specifically on streaming services like Netflix and Hulu, and the really bold and diverse depictions they're putting out there of teenage sexuality through shows like Big Mouth and Sex Education and Pen 15, which we'll talk about in a moment. We'll be back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about depictions of teenage sexuality and puberty on the small screen, specifically on streaming services. We're talking about shows like Big Mouth on Netflix and Sex Education on Netflix, and also the Hulu series Pen 15. That comes to us from Maya Erskine and Anna Kunkel, and they play themselves as their 13-year-old middle school selves in the series. And we've got a scene here from Pen 15. And you'll hear Maya Erskine's character as she regularly starts masturbating and feeling conflicted over her desire to do it and the shame and guilt that she feels as well. And she finally confesses what she's doing. She confesses to her best friend, played by Anna Kunkel.
I've been putting my hands down my pants on my area down there to feel good.
When I'm in bed, sometimes I put my hands between my legs to feel good.
Really? And you don't feel gross?
How gross can I feel if you do it too?
Promise I'm not a pervert. I swear you won't tell anyone.
Oh my God, I swear. You swear too.
I swear, yeah.
The scene from the Hulu series Pen 15. I'm joined today by Sonia Soraya. She's TV critic at Vanity Fair. Shafia Zaloom also joins us. She's health educator at the Urban School in San Francisco. Shafia, I was racking my brain, and I can tell you, never once when I was in middle school or high school did I ever, I can't remember ever seeing a scene like this on television. I mean, how remarkable is it that this is the level of vulnerability and frankness that some of these series are bringing now?
I think it's fantastic. And Big Mouth also, I mean, you have this trio that we're talking about, and that scene with Amy in Sex Education around, you know, pleasure, mm-hmm. genuine pleasure, and she masturbates to actually figure out what that is for herself. And then in Big Mouth, there's when girls get horny too. And then in the scene you just clipped, like, it's phenomenal because, no, when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, I never saw reference to that either. No one really talked about it as well. You know, there are different ways that we tried to explore our sexuality, but really it was kind of unspoken. And there is a double standard around masturbation and pleasure and, you know, women. And so I think it's fantastic that this is being brought out into the space and people are talking about it and normalizing it. For young women, but for older women, yeah. Adult women too.
So the normalization there is something significant. But I keep going back to what we've explored earlier that, yes, these things might be coming to us in the culture through Netflix, through Hulu, things like that. But we're still also in a place where, what, half of American states require some form of sex education. And what, I saw that statistic about 13, only 13 of them require them to be medically accurate. So how much good can all of this do when we don't actually have, you know, systems of education in schools that can supplement what people are seeing on Netflix or Hulu?
Well, as a professional sex educator, and I know other professional sex educators who believe the same thing, like the parent actually should be the primary sexuality educator in a child's life, because the majority of sex education is actually about values. And so that's something that families really should be focused on. They also can't be the only sex educator. That, you know, in schools, there are tremendous opportunities that we have with kids to explore and talk about these topics with the very people that they may be exploring them with. And to give medically accurate, you know, information, to just provide a different inroad. Kids eat this up. They just need a path. And it's really super important. So as parents, we actually really need to rally and be having these conversations with our kids, especially if schools don't have the resources to do so.
Right. Well, Sonia, what do you think about Pen 15?
Oh, I love Pen 15. It speaks really strongly to me because that is the era that I was also that age. Mm-hmm. So Maya and Anna are playing themselves in 2000 when they're about the year 2000 when they're about 14. All of the references, like the Spice Girls references, the yeah. Bewitched concert that they go to, it was all very deeply, upsettingly familiar. And, you know, to speak to what you guys were just talking about education, I think one of the roles that these shows can play, that I hope that they play, and it sounds like based on some of the callers that they do, is destigmatizing trying to get more information, destigmatizing sharing or asking. I mean, I think that there is, I think that parents feel a lot of concern and taboo about how to share this information with their children. And of course, there isn't the sex education programs in the country aren't nearly as widespread or as comprehensive as we'd like. So I think that seeing characters on TV ask questions or experiment can pave a path forward for people to start asking these questions in their own lives, which I hope is where we go from here.
Well, let's go back to our callers. Lelania is calling from Gulfport, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old daughter, and I just want to say that I've seen Big Mouth. My husband and I have watched the episodes. I watch sex education, and it's kind of preparing me for all of those different growth areas within puberty. It's kind of like these are things that are happening, you know, right now in the world with kids at that age, and it opens up areas for me to have conversations with them and kind of prepare myself mentally so we can have these in-depth conversations. And I also agree that it is the parent is the primary educator on, especially what you said about not necessarily morality, but what is important as what you want to get across to your child about themselves personally and how they see themselves.
Well, Lelania, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Dion, who's calling from Savannah, Georgia. Dion, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that Big Mouths and Pen 15 have done wonders, to be fair. I grew up in the 90s and 2000s, and the shows I remember watching growing up were The Wonder Years and Degrassi, which, to be fair, just taught me how to be dramatic. these do such a great job of portraying, these shows portray, like, even though Big Mouths is animated, they do such a great job portraying what I went through, how awkward puberty was, and how obsessing and weird it was. Like, to the point, me and my wife started watching Pen 15 2 weeks ago, and we had to stop after, like, the fourth episode because she's like, I'm having too many flashbacks when I was 14, and this is really weird, and it's
I've
so
heard
accurate,
that before.
And I just commend them so much on doing such a great job, and I know they get a lot of slack, especially Big Mouths, because it's raunchy, but it's raunchy because it's accurate.
Yeah.
It's so accurate and creepy.
Oh, Dion, thank you so much for your call. Sonia, was that you saying that you'd heard people saying that they're having flashbacks?
One of my best friends was like, I read your review. I'm watching it. I had to stop. It was too much. Like, it was bringing her back to that really intense that angst of being at that age and having no idea how your body works and no idea what people expect of you. That's, I love that. That's real. I can relate.
Yeah. It's interesting because we have a different view of this coming in online on our website. Modern Publius is saying, I would love to watch Big Mouth with my son, but it so frequently crosses the line between uncomfortable and obscene that my wife and I decided not to do so. The Shame Wizard is brilliant. The concept behind the hormone monsters equally so, but there's some other scenes that are too vulgar, Modern Publius says, for early teenagers. But we have a listener here on Facebook, Genevieve Hunter, says, I absolutely loved the show Sex Education. The characters' conversations and relationships were deep, real, and at the same time hilarious. They were inclusive in a way that I don't see American characters and shows. Shafia Zaloom, respond to that, because of the there is quite a diversity of young people that we see in Sex Education.
Oh, and I think that's so important and validating for young people who are really trying to figure out what their sexual identity is. And it's so important that we be inclusive of different genders and orientations and sexualities in a way that's positive. I feel like still, you know, a lot of our culture is very sex negative and how it stigmatizes sex and the body shaming and over-objectification and sexualization of those bodies, and that we really need to create a cultural shift towards a sex-positive mindset. And that means that we can respect other people's choices around their sexuality as long as they are safe and consensual and different from ours, and that that's okay, and that we all have the capacity to engage in these relationships. You know, research, the social science shows that when it comes to happiness and joy in life, especially in adulthood, it's really about the quality of your relationships that will determine the quality of your life and how we are able to be true to who we are in our hearts. And I think that that's really important for young people to get. And for us to include and to talk about as adults. And just like Sonia was saying, you know, this generates a lot of empathy. And from the adult perspective, which is what we want to lead these conversations with when we talk to our kids. So I think it actually sets us up from both perspectives to have substantive, you know, meaningful dialogue about what's going on, what the family values are. I appreciated what the other the other person who wrote in said too. Like, we watched it. It's a both and for us. But I think that that's going to inspire conversation, which is what's the most important piece, you know?
Let me just ask you quickly, though, Shafia. I mean, aren't we also in a time where, according to some measures, teenage sexual activity is going down?
Yeah, the sexual recession. Yes, I mean, in some ways, and there are different, it is. And, you know, when you look at sort of the average age of sexual debut, which is sort of the more traditional, the way we would think of traditional losing your virginity, and how much sex teenagers are having, it's gone down a little bit, a fraction, certainly. There are different theories as to why that's happening, and some of it has to do with, you know, phone use and how kids are social through the digital space, and so that they're not actually present in each other's presence to explore sexuality with their bodies. And I think of those kids who are sexually active, because they're still those who are, or sexual just with themselves, that we still need to provide guidance and to encourage that positivity. You know, a lot of times we tend to generalize adolescence as being so fraught with angst. We also need to acknowledge and support kids in realizing that a lot of it is really beautiful in terms of discovery and growing older. You know, that we have to talk about those pieces, too.
Let's go to Wanda, who's calling from Central City, Kentucky. Wanda, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think this is a wonderful program. As a 71-year-old retired librarian, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Southern girls are raised with guilt and shame. You know, I was made to feel very shamed about feeling sexual and wanting to masturbate. And my parents told me nothing about sex. So what little I learned, I would go to my grandmother's house, and she kept boarders, and I would go and look at their girly magazines. So that was the limited amount of education that I received about sex, because nothing from my parents. Even menstruation was a dark age, you know, had a girlfriend take me to the home ec room, you know, and deal with that, you know. And so it was really scary, you know, and I think this is wonderful.
Wanda, my heart's breaking here for you. It sounds like you wished you had a show like, or shows like this when you were younger.
Yes, definitely. Oh. You know, I think it's wonderful. You know, we need more. I think it's always good. As a librarian, I think more information is always better.
Yeah. Well, Wanda, thank you so much for your call. Let's see if we can sneak in one last call here. Shannon is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Shannon, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a facilitator for a program called Our Whole Life through my Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is an all-inclusive, sex-positive, as you brought up that phrase, program that is non-religious that we provide to our community that encourages these conversations. And these shows are definitely something that help those kids because it is, I personally do the junior high and the high school group, but it is a age appropriate throughout the whole entire life of sexuality, positivity. How do you make those choices? How do you create those boundaries? Where you get your beliefs from, and how to have those conversations. And these TV shows are definitely hitting these teenage populations and helping them have those conversations. They bring up storylines in our classes. It's a safe space to discuss those things. They can ask those hard questions, and we can help them have those conversations with their parents by giving them cues, you know, saying, hey, you know, you need to definitely have a conversation with your parents about this, if this is something that you're thinking about. And how to do that in a way that's not embarrassing that for either the parent or the child. So thank you for creating these shows. These are great ways to start conversations.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for your call. Sonia Soraya, let me just ask you very, very briefly. Do you think we're going to see more of these shows coming up on the streaming services?
Absolutely. I think that Big Mouth and Sex Education were already picking up on a trend that was established by some earlier Netflix teen programming. I think that now with Pen 15, Hulu's getting into the game too. Streaming services have a lot of freedom, an unprecedented amount of freedom. And I think that something to remember is that these shows are global. So they're not, especially on Netflix, we're not just talking about American audiences that are underserved. We're talking about worldwide. There's a lot of teenagers out there.
Yeah. Well, so there's one last point that we should make in the course of this conversation here. And this is in the spirit of full disclosure, because when Big Mouth first debuted, my social media, my Twitter feed was full of some alerts here because of this scene where Nick invites his friend Andrew to a high school party. And Andrew brings up the idea to his girlfriend, Missy, all while struggling with keeping his hormone monster in check. And here's what happens.
Hey, who's that?
Oh, it was Nick. His sister's throwing some high school party, and he invited us.
Wow. Do you want to go?
Deeply!
Stop it.
Because on NPR, Meghna Chakrabarty says that couples should do new brave things together, and a high school party sounds pretty brave.
Well, I mean, if Meg Jabroni said that, but what do we tell your parents?
We're going to see a movie.
There are some serious NPR nerds on the writer's room at Big Mouth. So Shafia Zaloom, health educator at the Urban School in San Francisco and author of the forthcoming book, Sex, Teens, and Everything in Between. Shafia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Sonia Soraya, TV critic at Vanity Fair. Her latest piece is headlined, Netflix and Pen 15 are changing the way TV does teen sex. Sonia, it's been a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna.
I'm Meg Jabroni. This is On Point.